Hava Hunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Gopi Janna Balabha Gravadha Hari. Gopi Janna Balabha Gravadha Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachariya. Yamuna Tira Vanachariya. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parabraja Gacchara Sotera Sotera Shri Shrimati Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Charya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Guranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Bacharani Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskacha Adishitarane. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 16. Krishna chastises the serpent Kaliya. Doing verse 17, there's no purport, so I guess we go to verse 18 as well. Okay. Tain Veshamana Dayatam. Krishnam Suchitaya Padai. Bhagava Lakshanaira Chagmu. Padavya Yamuna Tatam. Tain Veshamana Dhyatam. Krishnam Suchitaya Padai. Bhagava Lakshanaira Jagmu. Padavya Yamuna Tatam. Tanve Shamana Dayatam. Krishnam Suchitaya Padai. Bhagava Lakshanaira Jagmu. Padavya Yamuna Tatam. Others. ladies. The students want to chant? Vishnanam Tayatam Krishnam Suchitaya Parai Bhagava Lakshanaya Chagmu Padavya Yamanatatam. Thank you. So, with the word te, they. Anveshamana, searching out, Dayatam, their dearmost, Krishnam, Krishna, Suchitaya, along the path, which was marked, Padai, by his footprints, Bhagavat Lakshanai, the symbolic markings of the personality of Godhead. Jagmu, they went. Padavya, along the path. Yamuna Tatam, to the bank of the Yamuna. Translation, the residents hurried toward the banks of the Yamuna in the search of their dearmost Krishna, following the path marked by his footprints, which bore the unique signs of the personality of Godhead. There's no purport. I'm not sure on our schedule, whether it was, I think, Prime Govinda, I think you're next on Monday.
Yes.
I'm going to go ahead and do 18, so just note that. Okay. I'll probably mess everything up. Anyway, we'll see. Okay. Text 18, translation purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The footprints of Lord Krishna, the master of the entire cowherd community, were marked with the lotus flower, barley corn, elephant goad, thunderbolt, and flag. My dear King Parikit, seeing his footprints on the path among the cow's hoofprints, the residents of Vrindavan rushed along in great haste. Purport. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments as follows. Since Lord Krishna had passed along the path sometime previously, why weren't his footprints, which were surrounded by those of cows, cowherd boys, and so on, smudged over and brushed away? Why hadn't his footprints been obliterated by those of the beasts and birds of the Vrindavan forest? The answer is indicated by the word Vishpati, master of the cowherd community. Since Lord Krishna is actually the wealth of all living beings, all the inhabitants of the forests of Vraja would carefully preserve his footprints as great treasures, the very ornaments of the earth. Thus no creature within Vrindavan would ever walk upon Lord Krishna's footprints. Om Jnana Timaranda Shagana Jana Salakaya Chakshilum Mitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Panchakalpa Tribhischa Kripasinda Devacha Patitama Pavanevyo Vaishnavyo Mo Namaha. I mean, a technological problem here. Yesterday, I had a very, very beautiful description of the residents of Vrindavan and their great love for Krishna and how Krishna was everything to them. He meant that they had practically no use for life itself outside of their relationship with Krishna and being able to associate and see Krishna on a regular basis. Today, we're extending that concept somewhat to not only this great love and attachment and attraction to Krishna, but even to Krishna's feet and to Krishna's footprints as they are seen throughout the whole area of Vrindavan. So we see this quite a bit throughout Krishna book. Many times it's mentioned how Krishna's footprints are seen everywhere. And this gives great joy to the Vrajavasis, that they are able to experience Krishna in this way, seeing his footprints, seeing signs and indications that he has been there. We also saw later in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, there's the story of Akura. When Akura is sent by Kamsa to bring back Krishna and Balaram for, of course, the famous fight with the wrestlers. When Akura first enters the area of Vraja, he first sees the footprints of Krishna and the cows. And when he sees those footprints of Krishna, he falls down, he rolls in the sand, he rolls in the dust of Vrindavan, and becomes completely overwhelmed with symptoms of ecstasy. This is the great power that is there in Krishna's footprints and Krishna's lotus feet. Now, how does everyone know that these are Krishna's footprints? Because they are marked with these symbols. We're hearing here the symbols of the lotus flower, barley corn, elephant goat, and thunderbolt and flag. Very clearly marked that these footprints are Krishna's. Of course, we might have some lines on our hands and our feet, but they usually don't mean too much. Of course, they might mean somebody who's expert at that science. But Krishna's, these very, very distinct markings that anybody would know that this is Krishna has been here. I think there are others as well, besides the ones that are mentioned. Aren't there 21 or 18 different markings? They're listed in different scriptures, but I couldn't find them easily. But and of course, Radharani has particular symbols on her feet as well. So it becomes very clear that this is no ordinary person. What ordinary person has all of these very distinct symbols? Things like lotus flowers, a thunderbolt, a flag, and the prints of their feet. And of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also had very similar markings on his lotus feet when he appeared in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. It says, the Lord's parents are astonished to see footprints marked with the signs of a banner, a thunderbolt, an elephant goad, and a flag. So the same symbols or signs that we see on Krishna's feet were also there in Lord Chaitanya. So this is obviously a mark of a very, very special personality. And only the Supreme Personality of Godhead would have such incredible markings on his feet. So these footprints of Krishna in Vrindavan that are embedded in the dust, in the soil of Vrindavan, are so special. They're so cherished, so beloved by the residents of Vrindavan that they don't even walk on them. And so that's what's being described. Sanatana Goswami, in his purports to this verse, asks the question, if all the coward boys and cows had all gone down the same path and everyone sort of trampling over, how would you so clearly see these footprints of Krishna? And the answer is because they were so much dear to the Vrajavasis that no one would even walk on Krishna's footprints. They were so special, so sacred, so worshipable that nobody would even walk on those footprints. So you could clearly see wherever Krishna walked throughout the whole area of Vrindavan. So we often talk about Krishna's feet, Krishna's footprints, his lotus feet. Why is this so special? Why are the lotus feet or worshiping his footprints, why is this? For somebody who is probably new to Krishna consciousness, it might seem very surprising. Why so much attention on the feet or the footprints? Well, we actually revere Krishna's lotus feet for many reasons, but two reasons specifically is, first of all, that the very lotus feet of Krishna give great relief from material suffering, and they purify the consciousness of the living entity who comes in contact with the lotus feet of Krishna. But secondly, they also give great transcendental pleasure to the devotees. So contact with Krishna's lotus feet is non-different than contact with Krishna. Krishna's footprints even are non-different than him. So they very much cherish and relish this relationship with Krishna just by seeing those footprints. And these items are mentioned several places in the Bhagavatam, 3:16-17. Krishna says, my lotus feet have become so sacred that they immediately wipe out all sin, and I have acquired such a disposition that the goddess of fortune does not leave me. So, very much relishable, even by the goddess of fortune, that she does not ever leave his lotus feet, and he says he purifies all sins. Later, I believe probably in the next chapter, when the wives of Kaliya, the Nagapatnis, are speaking, they actually talk about this because, of course, Krishna's lotus feet are very prominent in this whole pastime of Kaliya, as has been pointed out, because, of course, he's dancing on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent. So Kaliya is actually getting the benefit. Although he's being chastised, he's being subdued, and he's being beaten down by Krishna, he's gaining this tremendous benefit of Krishna's lotus feet on his head. So the Nagapatnis say, O Lord, although this Kaliya, the king of serpents, has taken birth in the mode of ignorance and is controlled by anger, he has achieved, which is difficult for others to achieve. Embodied souls who are full of desires and are thus wandering in the cycle of birth and death can have all benediction manifested before their eyes simply by receiving the dust of your lotus feet. So they saw that as the great benediction that Kali had received of getting the dust of Krishna's lotus feet directly on his head. So sometimes we symbolically think about taking Krishna's, you know, feet upon her head, but here he literally received this great benediction of Krishna's lotus feet. So why do we say this? Why do we say dust of the lotus feet? Why this sort of symbolic, or it's not really symbolic, it's factual. But in a sense, you know, why this dust of the lotus feet? In the material world, our feet are considered the lowest, right? They're often considered contaminated or dirty. We take off our shoes when we come into the temple because our feet are dirty. And in fact, we really should, if we were doing it right, we would wash our feet. Of course, when people didn't wear shoes so much and they walked around barefoot, they would always wash their feet before they would enter into a building, what to speak of a temple, because the feet were considered dirty. We avoid having someone else touch our feet. That's considered not to be a good thing. And it's very offensive to touch someone with your foot, right? You don't want to kick somebody or touch somebody. And, you know, when it happens sometimes, offering obeisances and you bump somebody with your foot, you know, you just say, excuse me, Hare Krishna, I'm sorry. You know, one of those, we offer some apology because it would be a mild offense to touch somebody or especially to kick somebody with our feet. So in this, all these ways, the foot is considered to be the lowest in the material world. But as we know, and we had a little discussion about that yesterday, this idea of the perverted reflection between the spiritual and material worlds, what is often the lowest in the material world is highest in the spiritual world and vice versa. So in the spiritual world, the feet are the highest. We have this, of course, example of the banyan tree in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that explains this idea that everything in the material world is this perverted reflection. What is high in the spiritual world becomes lower in the material world and vice versa. So the devotees are feeling very, very lowly, very humble in the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So naturally, we very humbly approach the feet of Krishna. So even when we're viewing the deity, when we first come in and take darshan of the deity, we should first look at Krishna's feet and Lord Chaitanya, of course, and all the deities. And when we approach Srila Prabhupada, we should approach his lotus feet first. This is part of our Vaishnava etiquette, and it shows our humility, that we first go to the feet of Krishna, then we gradually go up to look at the face. Just like the Srimad Bhagavatam, the early chapters are considered to be the feet and the lower portions. When we get to the 10th canto that we're reading now, this is considered to be the face of the Lord. So now, after having all the preliminary understanding of the philosophy and understanding the position of Krishna, now we're starting to look at the face of Krishna and experience these beautiful pastimes. But nevertheless, this sense of humility is always there. And so the lotus feet of Krishna are very much relished, and they are not in the category of our feet or other feet. And those of us in these material bodies, who our feet may not be so relishable. Krishna's feet, of course, are often described as being very soft, very sweet, very fragrant. They actually smell beautifully. Most of our feet don't smell so well. But Krishna's feet have this beautiful aroma. You know, they are like lotus. They're called lotus feet because they have the softness, the fragrance of the lotus petal. So they're very, very nice. So the devotee approaches the feet of the Lord. Now, when we talk about approaching lotus feet, we're actually talking about approaching Krishna in a certain mood. This represents the mood of the devotee, and it's the mood of service and surrender. So, taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna means service and surrender to him. Later in his 10th canto, the gopis say, Goddess Lakshmi, whose glance is sought after by the demigods with great endeavor, has achieved the unique position of always remaining at the chest of her lord Narayan. Still, she desires the dust of his lotus feet, even though she has to share that dust with Tulsi Devi, and indeed with the Lord's many other servants. Similarly, we have approached the dust of your lotus feet for shelter. Of course, we know that Tulsi's desire was always to be at the lotus feet of Krishna, and therefore she takes birth continually as Tulsi, and her Tulsi leaves are always there at the feet of Krishna. And we always put Tulsi leaves on the feet of the deities, because that was her desire, and she is so much pleasing by her pure devotional service to Krishna and always taking shelter of the lotus feet. So when we say taking shelter of lotus feet, what does it mean to us? It's a nice sounding thing. It sounds very poetic, taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, but what does it mean? Well, it means that we are surrendering to Krishna. It means that we are taking shelter. Means that we are seeing Krishna as our protector. That Krishna is the only person who can give us happiness, the only person who can give us protection, the only person that actually gives meaning to our life, and it is through our devotional service to him. So our goal in devotional service is complete surrender to Krishna and taking shelter of him at all times. This is the example that we see of the Vrajavasis. Just like particularly in yesterday's verse, when the residents of Vrindavan thought that Krishna was in danger, not only Krishna was in danger, because of these inauspicious omens, he might have even been giving up his life, then their life was completely useless. You know, so their whole life was based around Krishna. We also see that not only was it based around Krishna, but at every moment they would take the shelter of Krishna. What would happen whenever there was some demon that would enter into Vraj? The coward boys would say, oh, we're not worried. Krishna will take care of it. We'll simply take care of it. They walked into the mouth of Agasura demon. They even debated a little bit. Oh, is this a great snake? Is this some plaything? What do we think this is? It could be a great serpent who's ready to swallow us. That doesn't matter. Krishna will protect us. So they walked right in. This was the great faith that the residents of Vrindavan had in Krishna, that they could take shelter of him at every moment and always expect his protection. So this surrender is not just a theoretical understanding. It's something that we need to practically realize. And much of our practice of sadhana, of devotional service, is a process of gradually more and more learning to take shelter and surrender to Krishna. Even though we may have the theoretical idea, yes, I should surrender to Krishna, I should give my life to Krishna, I should serve Krishna 24 hours a day. How many of us can actually do that? How many of you can say that you serve Krishna 24 hours a day? Everyone? Okay, we have a few. Good. That's a wonderful desire to aspire to. I should be so fortunate to even want to have that desire to serve Krishna 24 hours a day. Thank you very much. So we understand that, but sometimes it's hard to do. We know that that's our desire and that's what our goal of life is, but it can be hard to do practically in the day-to-day moments. Because why? Because material energy is very strong. Maya is very strong, and the material energy has had us basically in her grips for many, many, many lifetimes. So for many lifetimes, we have been struggling with this material energy. Now, by the incredible fortune and the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we have come to this path of devotional service. And so we have begun the auspicious practice of sadhana bhakti, of Krishna consciousness, a process that's based upon purely serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead and, of course, his representatives and the spiritual master. But while the practice is pure, we may not yet be pure in our heart. There may still be anartas that we have to overcome. And one of the ways that we can see that we're making advancement on this path of transcendental knowledge and Krishna consciousness and the path of pure devotional service is how much we have surrendered to Krishna. So there are symptoms. It's mentioned, of course, in the Hari Bhakta Vilas and the quoted in the Majjhalila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, six signs of surrender. It says the six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of those things favorable to devotional service, the rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, knowing Krishna as the maintainer, full self-surrender, which means complete dependence on the Lord, and humility. You can see there's a common theme to these six signs of surrender. It all has to do really with this developing the realization that Krishna is my life and soul, that Krishna will give me all protection, that I don't need to go anywhere else besides Krishna. My life will be maintained by him. Now, sometimes, of course, we have to do many things in this material world that seem very practical. Some of us went to this financial management workshop that Krishna Gopal put on last night. You might think, well, why do we need to worry about financial management? And Krishna is our protector, he's our maintainer, he's taking care of us. That's true. But we also need to make some endeavor ourselves. So it's practical. And Srila Prabhupada always emphasizes practical balance. Sometimes, at one point, Prabhupada said, you have to work as though you're the doer, but know that you are not. So in other words, effort needs to be made. And that's part of our bhakti as well. It's not that we do nothing in devotional service. We just say, oh, it'll all happen. I don't have to do anything. You know, Krishna owns everything. So why do we offer Krishna flowers? Why do we offer Krishna food? Why do we dress him so nicely? Krishna doesn't need it, right? Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's created all of these things. It's for our development of our bhakti that we might realize our relationship of love with Krishna. We serve Krishna, not that he needs it, but Krishna does want our love. And we want to be in that loving relationship with Krishna. We want to regain, reestablish that loving relationship that we have lost. That we are now here in the material world, experiencing so many difficulties, so much stress, so many problems, simply because we have forgotten that relationship with Krishna. So Krishna allows us to serve in so many ways. Krishna does not need our service, but Krishna allows and accepts that service out of love. Because what he does want is that loving relationship. He does want the bhakti that we have. And that we can, again, offer back to Krishna. And as we do that, we understand more and more these symptoms of surrender. We understand how Krishna really is our only protector. He is our only maintainer. He is the source of everything. And the final stage is humility. When we understand that, we become very, very humble, knowing our position and our position in relationship with Krishna. But it's a humility that's very different than what we experience in the material world. In the material world, you know, people are often worried about their self-esteem or feeling good about themselves and like that. Well, that's important to the psychology of the living entity in this material world. In the spiritual world, it's there automatically. When one is completely humble, one is in the perfect position. When one is understanding Krishna's relationship to Krishna, he's completely satisfied. Because when we are so connected with Krishna, there is no real concern for ourselves. Because the self is completely happy. The self is in its perfect position. In the purport to that verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada says, situated in everyone's heart, Krishna deals differently according to the living entity's position. The living entity's position is to be under the protection of the illusory energy or under Krishna's personal protection. Those are basically our choices. That's what free will amounts to in this material world. We can choose to be under the protection of the illusory energy, or we can choose to be under Krishna's personal protection by taking up the process of bhakti and devotional service. When a living entity is fully surrendered, he is under the direct protection of Krishna, and Krishna gives him all intelligence by which he can advance in spiritual realization. So it's the perfect process. As we surrender to Krishna, Krishna gives us more intelligence of how to surrender more. So if we're not sure, if we feel our surrender is incomplete, we simply attempt to surrender, and Krishna gives us that intelligence to know how to better serve him. So this pastime of Kaliya, very, very wonderful pastime, and as we read through these two chapters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's more and more lessons that will be imparted that are within this pastime. And you know, we've experienced this now since we've started the 10th canto and really go through these verses little by little the Brahmam Vimoha Leela and, Mother Yashoda's and the Damodar pastime. So many of these are just filled with wonderful lessons. And we see so many different angles of devotional service that are being exemplified and being exemplified from the highest platform because we have the example of the greatest devotees of the Lord, the Vrijavasis, that we are sort of measuring. This is what devotional service, this is pure devotional service. And we can get so much insight into this process through these wonderful pastimes, as well as just really enjoying these pastimes, just because they're about Krishna. And everything about Krishna is attractive, enjoyable. So we don't even have to necessarily even screw out some deep meaning. We can just enjoy reading the pastimes of Krishna. On that level, it's all perfect. So we saw the surrender of the Vrijavasis, that Krishna was their entire life. And so they follow the footprints of Krishna as they're running towards the Kaliya Lake, as they're trying to find out what has happened to Krishna, their life and soul. And the footprints stand out clearly along the path. This path is interesting because in the purport to this verse, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes one other additional point, which is rather interesting. Vishwanath Chakravarti says, this verse hints at the discerning yogi who follows the path of the Vedas in pursuance of the highest truth while rejecting all illusory appearances of the truth. So this is another very interesting meaning that the great acharyas can find in this. In other words, here's Krishna's footprints, and then they're surrounded by all these other footprints. So in other words, and the residents of Vrindavan, they're only following Krishna's footprints. So in this way, we can understand that there may be so many other bewildering paths that may be there. But the devotee only follows the path of pure devotional service to Krishna and only follows his pure lotus feet to achieve all success in life and redevelop our loving relationship with Krishna. Okay, so I'll stop at that point. If there are any other thoughts, comments, questions, take them. Quiet group tonight, today. Trivikram Prabhu?
Anywhere it's difficult. I mean, you may see it, but what to speak of seeing the Mahakins at the bottom, you know? I mean, you know, let us say a scientific-minded person may want to ask that, well, how is it possible to see those markings on the footprints? You know,
well, it's not so difficult.
How we may be able to explain that, you know, I mean, I think
these are the types of things that defy material explanation. We have to understand that this is Krishna's power. This is Krishna's potency and ability. You know, and that he does this for his devotees, right? He imprints his footprints and those symbols all throughout Vrindavan so that the devotees can continually see them and remember Krishna. And that increases their ecstasy by being able to be reminded of Krishna. So he obviously does it deliberately. Somehow he imprints those in those markings. I don't know how. Pran Govinda Prabhu?
Srila Prabhupada always quote this verse, Natasya karjam karanam cha viddhati, natatsama bhadikas cha dishyati. Prabhupada quote that probably one of the most important verses, almost in every lecture I almost hear. So in that sloka it says there's Gyana Bala Kriya, there's a three potency in Golok Vrindavan, where this Sandini potency who manifests this Vrindavan, And Jogamaya, with the collaboration, preserve each footprint of Krishna very distinctly. Because this footprint is this morning footprint, not yesterday's. Krishna did walk on that road also million times or unlimited times. But this Sanatana Goswami Pada writes that Sandini Potency very distinctly maintain those footprints where the Brajavasi will be happy to see every day, and they actually enjoy this. At the same time,
just before you go on, you said it's the Yogamaya potency that preserves each footprint fresh,
yes,
each day.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Otherwise, it will be intervene the coward boys or the cows. They won't be able to dance or chant. It's like, oh, there is Krishna. Like, so it's not like that. Like, every footprint is preserved, and nobody actually ever step on it. Hmm. Nobody ever, because that's the beauty of the Jogamaya, preserving that. So that is transcendental way to look at it.
No, thank you. It's very, very nice addition to our understanding of Krishna's footprints. Okay, anything else? Any of the ladies? Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.